Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the co-director of charts at Billboard. Coming up today, we've got Must Hear Music with Billboard's Deputy Editor Digital, Joe Lynch. And it's one of three Pop Shop shows this week focusing on all things Taylor Swift. Joe and the team will be talking about Taylor's brand new album, Reputation. So stick around for that in just a moment. As always, the Billboard Pop Shop podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on iTunes so you won't miss an episode, and give us a rating or review while you're at it. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit iTunes.com/billboardpodcasts. So, fun fact about Taylor Swift on the charts. It was a little over 10 years ago she got her first number one on a Billboard chart, when her self-titled debut album hit number one on the Top Country Albums chart dated August 4th, 2007. The album spent 24 weeks at number one, and the diva would continue to chart on the country albums chart with new releases up through 2012's Red. Of course, her 2014 album, 1989, was her first full-on pop record, and that did not chart on the top country albums chart. And her new album, Reputation, will not chart on the country albums chart either. But I think it's probably going to debut at number one on the Billboard 200. I think we can safely say that that's probably a sure thing. So, let's get into it on Must Hear Music.
I'm sorry, the old Must Hear Music podcast can't come to the phone right now. Why? Just because we're doing something different. We're just going to do an all Taylor Swift-centric podcast right now. By popular Twitter fan request, we are just going to talk about Taylor Swift's Reputation on the podcast. But it's still Must Hear Music. I'm here with Andrew Unterberger.
Hey, what's up, Joe?
And Lindsay Havens.
I have tears in my eyes.
how do you feel about that?
I mean, you did warn me, but I just had no idea what was coming.
It was an admirable job covering up your mouth so that they wouldn't hear you laughing over Joe's intro.
Thank you.
Exactly. Appreciate that. Suppressed laughter. It's inescapable. Taylor Swift has a new album. It's her sixth album. It is called Reputation. It's not on Spotify yet, so there's a good chance that if you're not a Taylor stan, you have not heard the full thing.
Did you instinctively check Spotify for it on Thursday night?
Yes. I mean, just to see. I was just curious.
Okay. It definitely took me a minute to realize that I was going to have to pay money if I wanted to listen to the whole thing legit.
Yes, I forgot to.
I mean, that crossed my mind as well. But actually, so I purchased it on iTunes, and then I actually ended up buying it a second time because my friend was at Target, and she was like, "Do you want the copy that comes with the magazine?" And I was like,
Yeah, I kind of do.
So tomorrow I'm getting my copy with the Taylor Target exclusive magazine, which I believe has exclusive images and poetry in it.
So, you know, I actually like more excited. People were circulating, I think, the intro to the magazine online, and I actually really liked what she said in there, so I can't judge
too hard.
What's
the general gist of it?
It was just basically talking about reputations and how you, at a certain point, you just can't care.
Don't give a damn about your bad reputation.
Mm-hmm. Basically, she was just quoting that song the entire time.
It's a brilliant poet written by Joan. Brilliant poem written by Joan Jett.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember some of the lines I really liked, but I can't remember what they were now.
You can't quite quote the Swift poetry yet.
No.
Bummer. So let's talk about it. So Taylor Swift Reputation. We've got 15 tracks. Unlike past albums, it seems like there'll be no bonus tracks to this, because in lieu of the Target bonus tracks that usually come with her albums, there's this magazine thing. So it seems like this is what we get. This is the full, complete statement for new Taylor.
I think that's sort of the thing now. Like, I don't think artists really do deluxe editions anymore. What they'll do instead is they'll just kind of save songs in case they need to, put out a new one. It's like what Lady Gaga did with The Cure, I think.
Right.
That's sort of the game plan now for these big pop artists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyways, let's start with it. So we've talked about some of the songs before on the podcast. Unfortunately, Jason can't be here right now to admit he was wrong on the last one.
But
about
I am.
Call it what you want. But
and
you
I can.
Be here to admit you were wrong.
Yes, I've had a turnaround with this song.
Yes, Jason has too for the keeping score. But I don't know. Let's dig. You know, we heard Ready For It a while ago. But what do you guys think of this in the context of the full album as an album opener? One thing I'll say I love with it as the album opener, that the first vocal we hear on the LP is her clearing her throat. Like, yeah. I think that's a really funny setup.
In the context of the album, I like the song way more than I did on its own. I think it makes perfect sense that it would start off the album, like, literally saying, are you ready for this? This is a drastic change. My favorite fan theory that I've read is the dot, 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 starting with ready for it, and then so it goes, dot, 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 serving as sort of bookends. This is getting a little ahead, but basically how that, those songs, I think it's like those six or seven songs, are all talking about her public persona and her reputation. It's a little more aggressive. And then the second half of the album is more about her personal life.
Interesting.
And I who knows if that's true or not, but even when I was listening to the album, I'm like, there's a weird disconnect between the first and second half, so that it does kind of make sense to me.
Doubly true, because I think like the majority of the first half is a Max Martin and Shellback production, and the majority of the second half is Jack Antonoff, so it would make sense that they would kind of have those two separate identities.
Yeah.
This is actually one of my favorite things about the album in general, is that there are these kind of like proggy conceptual touches that appear throughout. You can kind of go deep on it, and like, yeah, there's like a million fan theories you can have about this album.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think it's actually much better in the context of the album, and I love those like opening bass bombs that the song starts out with. I love that's the first thing you hear on it, and like Let the Games Begin. Like that's just a great way to start off the album.
Yeah.
I mean, in the middle of the night in My Dreams Bridge, I still love, like,
same.
It's so.
I almost think that could have been its own song.
I know. I kind of wish, like, I mean, I do like the song, but I still wish, like, that part is really standout. I almost wish that was a song that was more just similar music.
Yeah,
that.
I agree.
That being said, I think it's a good opener. I think it works. Not one of my favorite songs in the album still, but like it. But we've talked about that before, so let's push into Endgame, track number two, which features Future and Ed Sheeran, both of whom rap on it, as well as Taylor. I'm only going to say that I love this.
I don't know how it works.
What do you guys think about it?
Like, to this day, when I look at it on paper, I'm like, this is going to be awful. 100%. And then I listen to it, and I'm like, I love this song.
Yeah, it makes no sense, but I totally agree with you. And like, Ed Sheeran rapping, like, there are songs where Ed Sheeran, like, actually raps. This, this is more like singing in a rhythmic flow. But yeah, there's like weird kind of chemistry on it between the two of them. And even with Future, like, the Future part I thought would be super shoehorned in and totally, like,
he sounds so happy.
Yeah, it sounds like he's having a good time. He's
way,
like,
more,
hey, guys,
energetic than he ever does. Well,
I know.
Ever, but then he usually does, on, especially on a feature. Like, usually, like what you're saying, Andrew, you imagine a feature, you know, for someone like Future, who doesn't really fit into the Taylor Swift world, would just be one of those, you know, here's $500,000 and you get this phoned in sort of thing. But, like, he really sounds invested in it, and it's good, and it makes sense in the, like, it almost sets up the entire track for them.
Yeah. And, like, they all kind of, like, there are lines in each verse that mirror each other, and, like, there's a nice flow between them. And you guys notice, I didn't even notice this until today, but, like, one of the chorus lines is like, Taylor talking about being on the A-Team.
Yes,
which
I love
is,
that.
Shout out to Ed Sheeran's first single, the A-Team.
And then you hear him singing A-Team in the background towards the end.
Cute.
I mean, I guess we could, you know, might as well just dive into that fan. So there's, with this song and Dress, which has a Shape of You reference.
You guys are determined to ruin my favorite song on this album, but go on.
Some people on Twitter are saying that it's like Taylor Swift, like a very like roundabout admission of a quickie affair with Ed Sheeran, or maybe some sort of,
or
like
a lust for Ed Sheeran.
Or maybe not an actual thing, but like a sort of lust,
fantastic phrase.
A simmering lust between these two friends. Because Dress is entirely about, you know, like, it's a bit about someone you thought was a friend, but you're starting to have romantic feelings towards them. And Endgame is a similar thing. It's kind of about having one thing going on, but then, like, seeing someone else as, like, your long-term thing. What do you think about? I think it's a really, I just, like, just in the sense of, like, insane pop culture theories, I love it. Don't really know if
I think
it's
a reach otherwise.
I think it's a reach, yeah.
I don't know. People who think of these, the creative minds.
It's true, yeah. I would never have come up with this myself, even though, like, I'm a huge kind of Taylor relationship conspiracy theorist. Like, we've had, like, me, Chris Payne, and Nick Williams, when he was working at Billboard, we would spend, like, hours just basically crafting fan fiction about the love triangle between Taylor Swift, Jack Antonoff, and Lorde.
Oh, that's
which
amazing.
Doesn't actually exist, I don't think, in any capacity, but there's just so much there if you want there to be. So I certainly relate to that line of thinking. And I personally believe, I think I was telling you about this the other day, Joe, I personally believe that, like, Ed Sheeran's entire pop star persona and kind of his, like, newfound Sheeran sexiness is entirely designed to impress Taylor Swift because he thought that she didn't take him seriously.
Do you really? I don't think that's true.
Do I have any evidence of it? No. Okay. Do I really think it? Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. I think they are good friends and nothing more.
Yeah. And, yeah.
I don't know.
But, I don't know. I'm sure she took him seriously. I mean, like, yeah. He's a great songwriter. She respects songwriting.
Yeah, but, like, there were these stories about how they would, like, write songs together on the trampoline. And it's like, I think that she took the relationship, like, very much on, like, a very innocent adolescent level.
Uh-huh.
And if Dress is really about Ed Sheeran, then clearly her perspective on that matter has shifted over the years.
Yeah. All right. But that's, I think, the only, like, sort of Paula's dead theory we're going to delve into on this podcast. Okay, so Endgame, yeah, it's, like, works shockingly well. It's really fun.
It's
her
very
rap
strange.
Is really fun.
It is a really fun song.
I love the line about buried hatchets, but I keep a map of where I put them.
Uh-huh.
And then you got it. Like, it's going to be so much, like, I like listening to it, but, like, imagine karaoke saying, "I don't love the drama, it loves me." That's going to be, like, the most fun in the world. The most fun.
By the way, a lot of axe work on this album in general. She's burying hatchets in this one, and I think, in one of the later ones, she talks about, like, bringing out the axe for Kanye. And
yeah.
She's angry.
Yeah, she's got that old school revenge anger.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the next track, I Did Something Bad.
I love this song so much.
Okay. What do you love about it?
Oh, that's a great question. I love the production. That's that's one of the big things that I love. And I love, it's like making fun of herself almost. She's like, I did something bad, but, like, did I? And if I did, so what? You know, it's, again, it's just like commentary on how she's perceived right now.
Mm-hmm. This one I'm not 100% on board with. It's
really?
Like, it's maybe taking the rap influences too far for her. I think, like, the gunshots in the background, I'm like, you're Taylor Swift. Like, this doesn't, like...
Fair.
Like, this is not your wheelhouse here.
Yeah.
That's true.
And it's a little bombastic, but I actually like the lyrics a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the funny thing for me is, like, how quickly I just come to accept it all as just Taylor Swift.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you had played this song for me 8 years ago, it would have sounded, like, totally shocking, and it would have been an unbelievably jarring experience. But, like, sure. Like, now I'm fine with it. She's kind of creeped into it incrementally enough that now, like, you know, this just sounds like what Taylor Swift sounds like now. It's surprising.
So when she just puts out a straight hardcore rap mixtape, you'll be like, well, this is just what Taylor Swift has always done.
Exactly. But it is kind of like that, where it's like as soon as she kind of gets in that mood, you forget that she used to totally not sound like it.
Right.
That's true.
I'm able to accept songs like this a little bit easier than I probably should be. Another real quick thing about this, I like that... the line, they're burning all the witches, even if you aren't one.
Yes,
that is
so
a great
good.
Line.
And I mostly like it because it implies that there are such a thing as witches and that they should be burned, but that she might not be one of them herself.
Right.
I also love the chorus, just, I did something bad, but why does it feel so good?
Sure.
It's like,
great chorus.
Thinking about old Taylor Swift, like, she never did anything bad, you know? And even if she did, she would never admit to it, and it wouldn't feel good. She'd feel guilty. I don't know. It's just like, she's owning up to who she is or who people think she is.
Right. Andrew has the Coming Around Again podcast. We talked about Taylor on that one, which I'm sure will be live by the time this goes live.
Mm-hmm.
I said something similar, so if anyone happened to hear both, pardon me for repeating myself. But I love that on this one, she's like, she's grown up a lot in the sense that she's, like, put herself as, like, the villain in a lot of these love stories. Like, she's the person on Gorgeous who, like, has a boyfriend but goes out and tries to, like, meet someone new and then tries to take them home with her.
Yeah.
Which is something Taylor of, you know, three albums ago would have, you know, found disgusting and horrible.
Right. Shameful.
You know, on Something Bad, she's saying, you know, she did something bad, but it feels great and she would do it again. Like, this is very, like, you know, she's, like, grown up kind of past some youthful naivete. And is, like, aware that, you know, just has basically just lived life. And, you know, I don't want to speak for the entire world, but, like, many people in romantic relationships, you're going to find at some point, you know, that you're not always the victim. Sometimes you look back and you're like, okay, well, I was the bad guy in that one.
Yeah.
I was the one who did the wrong thing. And she's, I mean, she gets criticized a lot for kind of always playing the victim. It's interesting that on this album, I feel like she's more, like, playing the villain than the victim on anything.
So I have a question for you guys. Is this the beginning of Taylor Swift, the pop diva? You would never really call her a diva before this, I don't think. This is her kind of leaning into, like, you know, kind of like the campier aspects of her appeal,
mm-hmm.
and her kind of, yeah, like, you know, playing the villain and kind of, you know, enjoying the drama, which is nothing you could really ever say that she's done before. So is this kind of the start of that phase of her career, do you think, this song and the album specifically?
I have to call out the last song in order to answer this question.
Oh, dear. Okay.
So jumping ahead again. But if it is a phase, I think it's going to be short-lived for this album cycle only, because yet another fan theory is saying that sort of more out. The... I know. I was reading it on Billboard.com today. What is it? New Year's Day is the last track.
Yes.
It's definitely more stripped down, a little more acoustic, and that could almost be a symbol of, like, I'm going to return to something more like this on my next album. So I don't know if it's going to be a long-lasting phase. It might just be for the sake of Reputation.
I don't know. It's such a, she always kind of ends her albums on that. Like, Clean, Begin Again, like, New Year's
that
Day.
It just stands out so much, though.
It does. No, it really does. Album. But there's always, she always ends it with, like, this kind of melancholy, like, the quietest one on the record.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I don't know if it'll be, I don't know if it's the start of Pop Diva. It's hard to, at this point, I genuinely don't know what her next album would sound like. And she probably doesn't either. Like, I feel like she's just, yeah, like, you know, pretty restless at this point creatively, which is great, which is always exciting to see. But let's move to number four, which I have to, Don't Blame Me.
Mm-hmm.
What about this one?
I like that she kind of sounds like Florence Welch on it.
Yes, there's definitely, it's much more soulful than we've ever heard
from
her.
Yeah, it's interesting. The song itself, like, this is one of the few on the album that I still can't, like, recall after several listens. I
kind of feel the same.
Yeah, the hook doesn't really grab me, but it's an interesting sound of Taylor.
Yeah, no, I like it. I feel like I really do love the album, but, like, this one and the last one are maybe my least favorites.
Yeah.
It's, like, kind of her veering into, like, vaguely soulful gospel territory, but with, like, a lot of EDM wub-wubs, and it just, I don't know, it works perfectly. It's fine.
The lyrics are a little flat, too.
But yeah, so let's just move to the next one. All Delicate, right. Which I
my
love.
Favorite.
One of my favorite, definitely one of my top three on this album. It's, you know, and it starts out with basically, what's the line? My reputation's never been worse, so you must like me for me.
Yes.
Which is just, you know, another great Taylor Swift couplet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do you guys think about it?
Well, I love how, like, the word reputation kind of pops up throughout the album. You know,
yeah.
Kind of gives it a thematic coherence. And I don't know if she overplays it, mm-hmm. but yeah, it's a great opening line. I like the next line, I think, is even better about we can't make any promises, but you can make me a drink.
Yes.
That's like a very good adult spin on, like, a kind of classic mm-hmm. Taylor sort of lyric.
Yeah.
Don't know if I'd buy her as, like, an East Side dive bar denizen.
That's the one thing that I get really hung up on,
too.
Yeah.
Well,
it's like, she's not doing shots at the Continental. I'm sorry. I just don't see that happening.
That totally crossed my mind, too. I was like, that must mean at some point that she at least once went to one and was like, this will work for
it's
a song.
It's possible, you know.
Yeah.
Which is, can you imagine if you're in that Lower East Side, like, New York City dive bar and Taylor
oh, I'm
Swift
gonna
is
find
there?
It.
Like, what would you have done if you were witness to that?
I don't know.
It would be, like, unbelievable.
This
I wonder
whole if... song is just, like, there's a certain sense of normalcy in it that you just don't often hear from Taylor Swift, let alone other mm-hmm. huge pop stars. Like, he's wearing Nikes and jeans, mm-hmm. you know, just, like, really simple qualities that make it relatable.
Mm-hmm.
But I cut you off. What were you going to say?
Oh, no, I wasn't going to say anything important. Don't worry about it. no, I also like that it's after, especially after the last two tracks, I Did Something Bad and Don't Blame Me, it's very musically minimalist.
Mm-hmm.
She sounds, like, her vocal delivery, I think, is one of the best on the record. She sounds just, like, exhausted and wounded. And, you know, like, basically, you know, she's, like, with her delivery, like, taking us to where she was at that point in her life, just feeling battered by, you know, public perception and headlines and yada yada, to the point where she can just, like, you know, barely, the words are a whisper. But there's a lot of great detail in it. Andrew, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say that I don't think she actually did any production on this album, but Imogen Heap, who was a co-writer, I think a producer on Clean from mm-hmm. the closer on 1989, I think you can really hear her influence on this song, the vocals. It's the same sort of, like, proto auto-tune kind of mm-hmm. harmonies that are, you know, a lot lighter than other people tend to use it. And I think it's really very pretty on this song.
Yeah.
And it's a very subtle chorus, but it's very effective. And mm-hmm. I think this is definitely gonna be a fan favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Agree. So next is Look What You Made Me Do, which we've had the longest to sit with of any song on this album. We've talked about it before, so I don't want to get into it too much, but I guess within the context of the album, has the album changed your thoughts on this song, either of you guys?
A little bit, I guess. Like, I like that it comes after Delicate because that is such a soft song in comparison. Mm-hmm. It really kind of makes this song jump out a little bit. And I guess like, I have a little bit more of an appreciation for just how much is going on in it sonically. There's a lot of kind of different structural things going on. There's, you know, several different bridges. It's interesting. There's a lot to kind of digest with it. I still think some of the lyrics are terrible. Yep. And I still think it was, like, you know, we talked about this on our previous podcast, but, like, so much of Look What You Made Me Do was narrative focused, and it really kind of distracted from everything that I tend to like about Taylor, which you can hear in the song a little bit. There is that sort of detail that she normally packs into these songs, and there are some interesting takes on perspective and things like that, but it's just not my Taylor of choice. Look What You Made Me Do.
My Taylor of choice.
And that line about, like, you locked me out and you threw a feast. It's so ridiculous that she herself says what to it. She's like, what?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I kind of like that, but I hear you.
It's okay.
I could see definitely going either way with that line.
Well, what about you, Lindsay?
Honestly, it didn't really change for me being in the album. I think it was fine to sort of bury it in the middle.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Not too much attention placed on it that way. I liked it when it first came out. I thought it was fine. So I guess I'm not really bothered by it any more or less now. But it's not my favorite by any means off the album.
I liked it a lot when it came out. I definitely love it now. I like that it's, like, the campiest we get on the... You know, she's basically, like, 1960s Batman cartoon villain.
Oh my God.
You can see, like, the bubbles of the onomatopoeia kind of shadow.
I love that. I love that she's leaning into it and, like, playing up the camp factor, which, you know, we've gotten from her before. I think visually we got it in the Bad Blood video, but, like, this is, like, musically, like, the most ridiculous thing we've heard from her, and I'm here for it. But next, So It Goes, ...
Yes.
Kurt Vonnegut reference.
Mm-hmm. Clearly.
Absolutely. I mean, possibly. I don't know. I'm sure she's read Vonnegut. I mean, she's a literate human.
She was a high schooler once. Was she a high schooler, actually?
No, she never was a high schooler.
All right, so never mind.
She was directly into adulthood. So yeah, So It Goes. What are her thoughts on this one?
I cannot remember what this sounds like. Right?
Oh, yeah, I was going to have you go first while I looked at the lyrics to this song.
No, I gave you a blank stare.
I think it's one of the. It's not one of my favorites. I like it, but it's certainly melodically not one of the most memorable.
Yeah, apparently not.
But, and I'm trying to think, I can't even recall the lyrics either, so.
This is going very
well. I guess we should have prepared more after this one.
No, I mean, I remember thinking that it's okay. I'll say that much about So It Goes. That's my definitive statement on the song, So It Goes. It's sort of I guess it's a transition song in between Look What You Made Me Do and Gorgeous, which are two of the kind of tentpole songs on the album.
Yes.
So maybe it's not unintentional. This is one of the less memorable tracks because she needs a little bit of a palate cleanser there.
All right, I'm looking up the lyrics right now. Yeah, this one, there was the line, "See you in the dark, all eyes on you, my magician." That one was definitely one of my least favorites because I'm kind of like, well, what the hell does that mean?
Yeah, what's the conspiracy theory about you, my magician?
Yeah, maybe Taylor Swift and David Blaine. I'm looking. None of these are my like favorite lyrics on the album. Anyway, so let's move on to Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Gorgeous. Yes. I loved it when it came out. I still love it. I think it's fantastic. It's so much fun. I love also the humor. I think we talked about this a bit on your podcast, Andrew, but there was a lot of humor on Red. It was, you know, the way she delivered the lines was very goofy and just affable and likable. She's not really affable and likable on this one so much, but there is a lot of humor on it. Like, I appreciate the stumbling home drunk to my cat's line, and then she's like, unless you want to come along. Like, it's kind of cheeky, it's winking, and then there's the bell ding after that. I mean, the bell ding throughout is also just funny, like, campy humor.
Yeah.
But it's a really lovely song, too. Like, it's genuine. Like, this is, like, probably the closest to, like, old... the last song is the closest to old Taylor, but this is one of the most, like, 1989-ish songs on it. And I love it. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it does the thing that, like, a lot of the best pop songs do, which is that it reminds me of something that I can't put my finger on. Like, I feel like I've heard a song like this before, but I can't say what it is, and, like, I can't figure out what the obvious reference points are. I think it's just, like, a really, really, really well-crafted pop song, and you already mentioned a lot of the best things about it. But, I just love that she does kind of play the villain on it, and, you know, She openly, like, hits on this guy, but admits that she already has a boyfriend, but still kind of pursues him anyway. And but, like, you know, as we were talking about this on my podcast last week, but, like, it's the kind of song that if it was done from the male perspective, it would sound kind of creepy and definitely, like, you know, unrespectable. But from her, it just sounds kind of winking and cute and, like, just kind of funny. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's an interesting perspective for her to take.
Yeah, I honestly don't have much to add. I like, of all the words that she chose, gorgeous, to describe someone, especially mm-hmm. a man, it's just not yeah. that often mm-hmm. done.
It's true. Yeah.
So that really stood out to me, too. But, yeah, you guys kind of touched on everything else.
And there was that video of Selena Gomez singing along to the song in her car, which made me happy because I know so Selena Taylor kind of been on the outs of late, and it just seems like a really good sing-along in your car sort of song anyway. So,
yeah.
Shout out to that video. I did not see that.
Me neither, but now I want to.
Worth 12 seconds of your time.
I don't know if I have that kind of time. Next is Getaway Car, which is definitely one of my favorites on the album.
Oh, interesting.
I love it. I love the lyrics. I knew from the first Old Fashioned We Were Cursed. I just also like the kind of moral of it, like her kind of like screwing over a guy and then just being like, well, what do you expect? Like, you met me in a getaway car.
Yeah.
You know, which is like a very, well, one, it's a great image for a lot of, you know, things we see in life. You know, there are a lot of relationships where you see someone start dating someone while they're either sort of still dating someone else or wrapping down, and then that relationship ends like that, and there is this kind of thing like, well, what do you expect to happen? Like, yeah. There's a pattern here. And I love that she's like kind of self-aware of that and pointing it out and owning it. But it's also still pretty romantic. Like, she's, you know, like, there's still some investment on her from her perspective in this like short brief relationship. But what do you guys think?
Too much Jack Antonoff. Like, there's one song per album of Taylor's now, it seems like, where it's really just a Bleacher song with her kind of plugged in, and this is that song.
And that was Out of the Woods in the last one?
Yeah, it was Out of the Woods in the last one. And this one, that's like, so funny. Like the end of the first verse where she, like, the vocals get really fast and aggressive, and it's like, ugh.
Yeah, like, no, it is, yeah.
I can see the guiding hand behind this one, and I'm not impressed, sorry.
That Jersey earnestness that ends the track.
I mean, I don't dislike the song, but I just, like, couldn't stop laughing through it because I just kept picturing, like, him kind of going intense on the piano behind mm-hmm. her. Like, takes me out of it a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess in general, I like the first half of the album better, so I think my commentary might wane a little bit from here on out. All right. Yeah, the song was all right for me.
What about, okay, King of My Heart is next. That's one, again. At first, I wasn't crazy into, and I think definitely grew on me.
Yeah, it's grown on me a little bit too, but as Lindsay sort of alluded to, this is like kind of where the album slows down a little bit for me. Mm-hmm. And like, for the record, like, every Taylor Swift album does this. 1989 did it.
Yeah.
Speak Now even did it. My favorite album of hers. Like, it's just, there's always like one or two tracks too many, and you couldn't really necessarily call this one filler because it's a well-constructed song. It's interesting, mm-hmm. but it just, I don't know, it doesn't jump off the page for me. And I hate that phrase, King of My Heart.
Yeah, little, me too. It's really tacky.
The phrase is lame. Yeah. I would agree with that. She seemed probably above that phrase. Yeah, I would say.
There are some interesting things going on with the production. The drum sound is pretty good, I think. Mm-hmm. Maybe earlier on the album would have stood out more, but yeah, this is one I could live without personally.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that. I like it a lot, but I think maybe earlier on the album is a good point because it does sort of get lost at this point
mm-hmm.
In a way that it didn't jump out till maybe the third or fourth listen to me. And even then, you're right, I still hate the song title. Dancing With Our Hands Tied, another song title I'm not wild about, I'll be honest. Yeah. And that one I think is like fine musically. It's like, I feel like at this point the album's kind of settling into kind of like a more familiar 1989-ish Jack Antonoff sound mm-hmm. that like is great and sounds good, but it's certainly less memorable.
How do you interpret that title, by the way? Like, what's the euphemism there?
I think it's a metaphor for trying to let loose, but there are reasons that you like can't fully.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I took it as, and I obviously, I don't know what I'm talking about. I have no more insight into this than anyone else, but I took it as like two people sort of, I guess, like gorgeous, like who aren't supposed to be like touching because mm-hmm. maybe they're, you know, betrothed to others, but like are nevertheless like dancing together or something like that.
Oh, so like slow dancing with our hands tied. Like I was just like picturing like, you know, kind of up-tempo dancing and like just limbs flailing everywhere. It's like, do you really need your hands to dance like that? But I can sort of see where that mm-hmm. goes there. But yeah, another song that, you know, it's okay. It's a little bit too much Jack Antonoff at this point. But the only thing I will say for this song is that it's another kind of like subdued, like not sort of standout song that leads into one of the obvious best songs on the album, and yes. I appreciate that it kind of clears the runway for Dress a little bit. So
Yeah, I was going to say next up is your favorite on the album,
easily,
correct? Yeah. Dress, which is the sexiest we've ever heard from Taylor.
It's stiff competition too.
Right, exactly. No, you know, she talks about, this is the one where she talks about buying the dress just so I could take it off. Andrew, you wrote a great piece about this.
Thank you.
You want to take lead on this?
Sure. Well, I'll start as I started on Coming Around Again last week and talk about the connection between this song and FKA Twigs' 2 Weeks, which actually, like, I listened to them back to back today, and like as I was listening to 2 Weeks, I was singing the chorus to Dress in my head over it. Like, it's very
mashup
similar.
Waiting to happen.
Yeah, like I would love to see her do it live sometime, but I think now that artists are getting sued for any sort of songwriting similarities in between their songs and pre-existing ones, maybe she's not going to want to take that chance.
Well,
but,
FKA should do it. Like when Madonna toured and she did Express Yourself and worked Born Your Way into it, to point out the similarities, FKA should do 2 Weeks and then put some Dress in there.
Yeah,
a little like, I'm not going to sue, but I'm going to roast you for this.
A live subtweet, certainly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A live subtweet.
But, you know, 2 Weeks was one of my favorite songs of the decade, and this song actually kind of matches it, I think. You know, it's a little bit less intense with, like, the imagery and the lyrics. Is not quite as violent as the FKA Twigs song is, but it's similarly seductive. And this is, I think, the best production job that Jack Antonoff does on the album. The twinkling synths in the background and the thudding percussion, and the way it builds up to the chorus is just perfect. And then when it deploys, it's I think the most stunning moment on the album. And another thing that I wrote about, but shout out to Taylor for like using the oldest songwriting trick in the book, which is saying the word stop and then having the music stop.
Yeah.
Which is great, though. So it works
good.
So well.
And she saves it for the third verse, like after not doing it the first two times around, so that when it does happen, it's still kind of unexpected and kind of, it really snaps you back to attention if you've started to zone the rest of the song out. What about you, Lindsay? Does this rank up there for you?
It's climbing slowly.
Okay.
It definitely,
getting up there on the leaderboard?
Yeah, it was not even in my initial top five. Oof. Just because, from what I said, like the first half of the album is really the stronger half to me. So those are the songs that I kept gravitating towards. But this is, it's getting up there. I've listened to it more and more, and, you know, I catch the little nuances, like you just said, that I'm starting to like. Are you looking up the lyrics?
Yes, sorry, I was looking up the lyrics. There's one on this I like, and I can't remember what it is. Yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything to, I think, you know, you covered the gist of it. I do think, this is one of the best on the album. You know, kind of Taylor Swift in very alt territory works surprisingly well.
Yeah.
Sort of like what you were saying with the hip-hop, it's the hip-hop influenced songs, is that, you know, you kind of don't realize until you're like halfway through it, they're like, oh, this isn't like how I pictured Taylor Swift sounding, but I'm still convinced, like it took me seconds to acclimate to this.
And it doesn't feel like she's, you know, she's not trying to make headlines with this song, like, you know, Taylor sings about sex or anything like that. It's really only the one chorus line that you call explicit. But the rest is just so suggestive, and the music fits along with it so well.
It's a little steamy.
Yeah,
it really
feels
wine. There's a bathtub.
Exactly, it feels like a song about sex without actually like dipping into serious carnality, which would probably still be a bridge too far for Taylor, and they're still largely teen fan base.
Well, that's the name of her next album. That was Serious Carnality. So
I'm pre-ordering that one right now. Absolutely. Yeah.
Did you find it yet?
No, I didn't. But say whatever you're gonna
say. So I think it was a style piece I was reading or something, just about how this song in particular really stands out just because of the way she dresses, and all of her lyrics up until this point have never even alluded to the imagery of her being undressed. And she gave a quote in some interview saying that, like, the second you go there, everyone pictures you naked, whether you're on stage, whether you're listening to the song, and, like, that's something she never wanted for herself. So, in her old age, she had a turnaround.
The ancient age of 27.
Yes.
Yeah, see, on the next tour, she's going to be like Miley Cyrus in her bangers phase.
Yeah, exactly.
Just bodies everywhere.
On SNL, though, her performance of Are You Ready For It was a little more, I mean, the dance moves were a little more revved up, in my opinion.
I didn't actually see that yet. Like, how did she do? What's the general buzz on the street about that?
I think from what I'm hearing, people think she was lip syncing for Are You Ready For It, and I can totally see why people think that. It looks like it. And sounds like it.
I'll say when I saw her live, like I saw her on the Speak Now tour in 2011, and like I got so fixated on just like staring at her mouth and like trying to figure out the exact times that she was lip syncing, because it just sounded a little bit too perfect, and like I came away from that like having an appreciation for artists whose voice like audibly cracks when you see them live.
Yeah.
Because it got so distracting. And it wouldn't be shocking for Taylor to do that on SNL now, but it's still a little bit disappointing because you do kind of want to hear the real Taylor.
Yeah, exactly. Well, especially the second one she did.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
She basically did an acoustic setting for the second song. Okay. But we're not there yet, so.
Right, excuse me. But no, also SNL is like one of the most notoriously difficult stages to play, so.
Yeah.
Whatever. I don't
care. Joe's going to give her a pass on that one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Next song, This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things, the other big headline maker, because this is the second song that's pretty clearly directed at Kanye and Kim. I think this is another one. I'll say, like King of My Heart, I kind of hate the phrase, This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things. And I kind of
song
went into
title
it.
Too.
Being like, oh, this is going to be kind of lame, but I actually like the way she delivers it. It's very, it's just like gleefully vindictive. And I think there's something, I think really leading up to this album, public persona-wise, she was kind of trying to play herself as like, oh, I'm above this. I don't want to get into the mud and all this stuff. And here she's just 100% getting into just like
muddy Taylor song.
Back-talking, mudslinging, backstabbing. And she sounds so happy doing it, and it's great. And also I love the way she sings it in this kind of like scolding parent voice. It's like treating him like a child. Did we talk about that on
it's funny because we talked about how patronizing a song Innocent was from Speak Now, which is her post VMAs, like, I forgive you, Kanye, because you're a little child and you know, you don't know what you're doing, sort of thing. And it's funny, this song is actually like twice as patronizing as that song, but it's more honest about it, I think. It doesn't have the nothing about this song feigns class.
Right, exactly.
So I think it's a little bit more okay, maybe.
Yes, there's no like moral high ground suggested. But yeah, the whole like white can of nice things because you take them and break them is just like yelling at a kid, basically.
Yeah, 100%.
But I'm there for it. I think it's top half of the album, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an absolutely psychotic song, but I kind of like it. Like, I appreciate that she saved it for like this late in the album and after Dress, which is, it makes for a pretty nuts transition. I hate the way she says baby in the song when she's like, here's to my baby. It sounds like she's saying Braby.
Braby.
I did.
There's
not
an R
think
sound
that.
In there. Listen to it, and you'll never unhear it. She says "Braby."
She says a couple words about the album weird for the sake of rhyming. There's one. What's the car that she mentions in one of the songs early on?
I do not recall.
I don't remember.
I can't remember. But she says it painfully inaccurate. It's not great. But anyway,
yeah, like that's fine. Her laugh is also like a very unconvincing fake laugh.
I kind of like that.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. It kind of plays up the artifice of the song in general, I guess. But it's definitely like one of the weirdest listens on a Taylor Swift album that I can recall. Like, it's tough to imagine this song existing on any other album, really.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Next up, second to last, Call It What You Want, one of my favorites. I love it.
You were having doubts last week, but that's
I did not have. No, you guys.
We got to a point where you were questioning it because we were hating so hard.
I know. Yeah.
Are you a secret Jack Antonoff fanboy, Joe? Like, I think you like the most Bleachers-y songs on this album.
I mean, here's the thing. I like Jack Antonoff. I'm not actually a Bleachers stan. Like, there's.
Me neither.
Especially in this office, I feel like there are many people here who really go hard for Bleachers. I would not put myself in that category, but I mean, I like his songwriting and I like his production work. I think, you know, he's done great work with other people. I have to say though, I mean, also, well, I don't want to get too far on the Antonoff train, but part of me, so after finishing Melodrama, which I know everyone loves and I also liked very much, but I was definitely kind of thinking like, I would like to hear Lord return to a non-Antonoff sound.
Mm-hmm.
However, with Taylor and Jack, I would like to hear more from that. Like, I feel like there's something the two of them together is very interesting to me. I just feel like there's endless fodder there.
So you're not a stan, but you are a professional shipper of Taylor and Jack.
I think, yes, professional shipper is accurate.
Okay.
But yeah, Call It What You Want. What I said last week was I just feel like in the sense of the album, it would take on a better, more full quality. And guess what?
Right.
The album came out, and I was right.
It totally does that.
So history proved me correct. what do you think about it?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think, you know, we talked a little bit last week about how the public is reacting to the advanced tracks on the album as being not representative of the album to come, or maybe just not like the best that they had to offer.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of that has to do with this song because it feels like a strange choice for an advanced track, for a, like, you know, a promotional single, whatever you want to call it. Like, it's definitely not a standout track on the album, I don't think. I don't even mean in terms of quality. I just mean, like, if you were to talk about, like, the five, like, most attention-grabbing songs, that would definitely not be one of them.
It's moodier. Got a great drum snap there.
Sure. Great drum snap. I like the title, even if it is kind of stolen from Foster the People. No shots there. Mm. There's some lyrics that I could take or leave. The chain around the neck one is a little 50-50.
Yeah, that one I still do not like.
But
gun to a knife fight.
Yeah.
I don't like that one.
Or what is it, a knife
to a knife fight? Yeah.
It's been done, but yeah.
Go for it.
No, it fills a nice kind of transition role in between This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things and The Closer. And I guess, you know, I feel like I've said that about almost every song on this album. I think it's just a well-paced album.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is, definitely. Yeah.
This was the other one that she did on SNL, and she did it stripped down acoustically, which was amazing, I thought. It just kind of reminded you, like, oh, this could have been an older Taylor track for sure, but the production changed it. But yeah, in the context of the album, I definitely like it a lot more than I first did.
Yay.
Yeah.
All right, next and last, we have New Year's Day, which closes the album. Very beautiful, heartfelt piano ballad. Completely unlike anything else on the album. Very sweet. The one thing I'll say, this is a clear, I think, standout for like an early fan favorite because it sounds like things we've heard from her before. And it's that kind of like sweet, you know, like unexpected perspective on romance that we used to get from her more often.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's great. I think it's really good. I mean, I don't know if I'd say one of her best songs ever, but like, It's a really beautiful, nice kind of cleanser at the end of an album that's this aggressive and occasionally vicious.
Yeah, and I like that it's called New Year's Day and takes place on New Year's Day because it gives it kind of like an end of an era sort of feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
I like how like intimate the production is. Like you can actually hear the piano pedals being pressed. It's sort of the same thing as Liability on the Lord album, which is also a Jack Antonoff joint. It's a beautiful note to end on, and it comes, you know, totally out of nowhere, considering how, you know, overproduced the rest of the album is. To hear something that's so quiet and intimate, it's a pretty beautiful note to end on.
Yeah. This is a personal thing. I don't like when songs are too specific.
Okay.
Like, I like when they set the scene vaguely.
It could be New Year's Day, or it could be some other vague American holiday.
Yeah, I'd prefer that. Okay. Like, if it was called American Holiday, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. This song, I would have been fine if it just wasn't on the album.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. I don't
think it brings something to it, but...
Compare it to food, you know how after you eat Chinese food and you, like, green tea ice cream is a really nice, like, refreshing taste to end on?
Never once had green tea ice cream.
Oh, it's amazing.
No, neither have I.
Okay, well, so no one can relate to this then. Oh, you get me. Thank you. well, this is what that does for me. It's like, you don't need it, but it's nice and refreshing to have if it's there.
Okay. But you could also do with just kind of leaving that dumpling taste kind of savory.
Exactly, 100%.
Yeah.
All right. Well, fair enough for that, I guess. But no, I actually think this is one of the songs that's going to stay with me the longest from this album.
Yeah. Mm. And there's something I just noticed in it today. I mean, obviously the New Year's Day connection, but then there's a line about reading the last page of a book first.
Mm.
And so I was like, oh, that's a line from When Harry Met Sally, where New Year's Day features prominently. So I think this must be sort of like a conscious nod to that. I mean, Taylor Swift, you know, rom-com fan, undoubtedly familiar with Harry Met Sally front to back. So
no, and then this is one of the fun things about Taylor albums in general. I think this one maybe more than any of the other ones so far is that like there really is a lot baked into the lyrics, and there's a lot of kind of deep connections to be drawn both within her catalog and to the catalog of other artists that she works with and other artists that she admires, and just kind of pop culture in general. And like, yeah, I've listened to the album like I think 5 times by now, and every time I'm still finding new things, new kind of connections to draw.
Yeah,
and that's pretty cool from a pop album. You don't get that everywhere.
Yeah, and then just other one kind of footnote slash aside. One of our writers, Allison Stubblebine, wrote a fun piece rounding up all the alcohol references on this album. But it really is—it's striking, like how much, like way more than any other Taylor album.
Sure.
Like alcohol it's features really so funny. Prominently in this. Like, you know, this song is about cleaning up bottles. There's the line about from the first Old Fashioned we were cursed. There's the lines about being drunk, talking about island breezes and turning the lights down low. Like, there's a lot of booze on this album, spilled wine. It's very like, which is kind of a pretty either subconscious or very direct way of being like, I'm an adult now, like, by the way, like, I'm mature and in mature relationships. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Well, here's my question, though. I mean, we've also talked about how kind of cars are a recurring motif on this album.
Yeah. And we had a piece go up on that over the weekend, too.
So are you starting to get worried that maybe we need to have a conversation with Taylor about you know, not mixing the drinking with the driving?
I don't think she's the one doing the driving.
That's true. She's usually in the passenger seat.
I doubt that she's the one doing the driving.
So as long as she, you know, she keeps her
That's her limo driver. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's all that really matters.
Mm-hmm. Also, I kind of see Taylor as like a two-drink. And I'm drunk.
That's, so true. Lightweight Taylor.
Well, especially it sounds like she's ordering a lot of expensive drinks. So, you know, you can only have so many Manhattans or Old Fashions.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you're not pounding like five Old Fashions. You're going to be flat on your face. But, I mean, she's a tiny person. Like, there's also, I'm sure, two drinks, you know, probably we're really getting into this.
Especially those East Side dive bars, man. They make
pour them heavy. Yeah.
Well, yeah, to bring it back to Continental, no, I don't think she's ordering the five shots for $12 deal.
Shout out to the Continental, which by the way is like closing in 2018.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's very sad, but
that's they used to be five shots for $10. They upped it till 12. That means that must be the problem. People are like, I will not pay that extra $2. I'm done with this place.
Well, I'm glad it's getting much here music representation.
Yeah, exactly.
Waiting days. Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, do we have any parting thoughts on the album? I mean, we've gabbed plenty about it, but
One quick side note about it. Do you remember how she had a song with Zayn that went to number 2 on the charts earlier this year?
Right? I was thinking about that, actually, which I don't really like that song.
I mean, that song was okay, but doesn't it feel like it happened 20 years ago?
It does.
It really does, yeah. I mean, this year has felt like many years.
That's a fair point, in many ways, but this is certainly one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe it'll be if they ever do release like a deluxe edition, maybe it'll be a bonus track. But otherwise, it's a footnote for Taylor.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. All right. Well, please tweet us what you thought about the album, favorite tracks, ones you loved, ones you hated. And that's all we've got for this Reputation-centric episode of Must Hear Music. Thanks, guys, for joining me. And
thanks so much for having me on, man. My first Must Hear Music episode.
Wait, is it really? I thought you were on one before.
I was on an unofficial Tom Petty Memoriam.
That's
not the same thing.
Basically the same. Whatever.
Just let him
have
it. It's his first one.
Yeah.
Let me have this show. I have so little.
Okay. All right. Thanks for joining us, you guys, and thanks for listening.
Yeah.
All right. Next time.